everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Raw Retro. Oh, for fuck's sake. I'm just going to do it again right now. I'm just going to keep it in. I'm not even going to edit it out. This is the behind-the-scenes stuff that you clamour for.
Everyone loves to hear us, you know, fuck up from time to time.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here. Easy for me to say on Inside the Ropes. Broadcasting for the first time from my brand new flat. Well, it's not brand new, but I now am brand new living in it. So there's that. And I'm joined by Sandra, who is American, and
I've lived in the same condo for like 11 years, so there we are.
How would you rate your condo out of 10? Like, if 10 was like the best a condo could be, with all the facilities and all that kind of stuff, 0 being the worst, what would your condo be?
Probably like a 5. I mean, it's fine. It's serviceable. It's kind of small because we have way too many books and stuff. But it's, you know, it's fine. I don't have to take care of a lawn because it's a condo. And so there are people that do that. And I don't have to pay for trash pickup because we have a dumpster because it's a condo. So I like that about it.
Go condos.
Go condos, right?
But we are here to talk about episode 252, if you're watching along with us on the network of Raw is War, Monday Night Raw. This is the March 23rd, 1998 episode of the show, the go-home episode for WrestleMania 14. It feels like WrestleMania 14 has kind of, like, come up quite fast in some ways. I don't know, have you found that? Like, it just feels weird that, like, there was so much dross for such a long time, and it's like we're almost being rewarded with something that we don't deserve.
Well, it seems like the past 3 weeks or so have really been, you know, gearing up toward WrestleMania. I think part of it is that we had to deal with No Way Out of Your House in Texas, which was stupid because there was no reason for that pay-per-view to happen. And it was, you know, a terrible pay-per-view, and it was just super boring. And so we were kind of on the road to WrestleMania already before that one, but then it was like, oh, right, so we have to do this No Way Out show, which no one cares about. And then it was after that that we could kind of actually start to ramp things up. So it does kind of feel like the past few weeks have really kind of gotten things going for sure. Although last week almost felt like more of a go-home show than this week in some ways. I don't know if it's just because I enjoyed last week's show more or what, but there was some stuff on this show that I was just like, why is this on the go-home to WrestleMania?
You say that the Quebecers did not belong on the go-home show for WrestleMania?
Quebecers came out twice. I'm saying that, you know, the Blackjacks explosion. Like,
can I just say, I cannot wait to dissect Barry Windham later on in this. Oh my God.
Barry Windham looks like he's been dissected and put back together.
Mm-hmm. So, we take off the show.
He looks better than the Rock and Roll Express, though. Fuck's sake.
That is true. That is very true. What did you call it? The Blackjacks?
The Blackjacks explosion.
We will get to that. But we kick off the show with Kevin Kelly bringing out Steve Austin. Austin's now got his Don't Trust Anybody t-shirt on.
It's a good t-shirt, actually, with the rattlesnake.
Yeah, he had loads of good t-shirts. Like, I don't know if anybody's had as many good ones as he did. Anyway.
Is he up there with the New Day in terms of good t-shirts? Because the New Day has some pretty good t-shirts.
I think Austin probably is the winner, though, because he had the Austin 316, then he had this one, then he has one called Stone Cold University, then he has an Austin 316 in Blood, and they're all the ones that, and then there's the Watt one, so they're all his big sellers, but even within them, as we go along, you'll notice that he will have a shirt for a couple of months, and there'll be another one, and another one, and another one, and they all sold. So,
King of merchandise, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
King of merch. Austin's out to obviously talk about what Vince said last week about him not being the WWF champion. And Austin said that he can't be molded into whatever Vince wants. He does whatever he wants inside the ring. And the most important thing is getting the title from Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania.
No, the most important thing is to get Shawn Michaels' ass and beat his ass. He's very obsessed with Shawn Michaels' ass.
Yes. For whatever reason, that immediately made me think of that Triple H line in 2011 where he said to Punk, I'm going to beat your skinny fat ass.
I'll beat your skinny fat ass.
So, you know, Austin's kind of just, you know, basically raging events, all this sort of stuff. And all of a sudden, Well, Kevin Kelly tells Austin at one point that, like, DX are on their way, they're all going to be here, can he handle them all by himself? And then Austin, of course, thinks that Kevin Kelly's insulting him by daring to, like, care for him in any way.
And yeah, because Kevin Kelly says DX are on their way to the arena in full force, and Steve Austin's like, are you saying I'm not in full force, son? Are you saying that I'm not? Because Steve mm-hmm. Austin is a petulant child.
So then Commissioner Slaughter comes out. Now, so I'm intrigued here to see... I'll say what happened just in a general sense, and you tell me, was there somebody clear here who was the babyface or the heel, and just what they were trying to achieve. So Slaughter comes out, he tells Austin that he doesn't have the night off, but in fact he will be wrestling tonight. Vince McMahon, who couldn't be here tonight, has said that Austin will meet the Intercontinental Champion, The Rock, later on tonight. And then Austin accepts the match, and then he's going to go on to do a promo about the match, and then Slaughter then says, if you don't wrestle him, then your match at WrestleMania will be a non-title match. And Austin said, I've already agreed to the match. And then Austin decides to hit another Stone Cold Stunner on Commissioner Slaughter to kind of end the segment. But what did you think? I'm very curious about Slaughter and Austin specifically. How did it play out for you?
Well, Slaughter just didn't make any sense, really, because, I mean, he comes out and, you know, Austin's like, you know, I have the night off and I have a cooler of Steve Weisers and I'm going to drink every last one of them. And I thought it was funny when Slaughter came out and Austin was like, you know, if you're here for one of my beers, son, I didn't bring one for you. Like, he has a cooler full of beer, but he is unwilling to share with Commissioner Slaughter, which is great. But then, yeah, I mean, he's like, you don't have the night off. And I thought it was interesting, first of all, that Austin's like, you know, says who, and Slaughter says the owner of the World Wrestling Federation, Vince McMahon, who can't be here tonight. So apparently Slaughter is not making his own decisions anymore at all. Like, he's basically just a mouthpiece for Vince McMahon at this point. So his commissionership seems to have been downgraded, I guess. But then, yeah, Austin accepts the match and he's like, all right, well, I thought I was going to have the night off, but you want me to wrestle Rocky Maivia, so I'll wrestle Rocky Maivia. That sounds good. And then Slaughter just intentionally antagonizes Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, what did Slaughter think was going to happen? He's familiar with Stone Cold Steve Austin's propensity to stunner everyone for no reason. And so he thought that Austin, after accepting the match, wanted to be told, if you don't wrestle him, though, even though you said you were going to, but if you don't, then the match at WrestleMania 14 is going to be non-title. So I'm putting this, you know, punishment on you for this thing that you already said you would do just in case you don't do it. It didn't make any sense. And so Austin, of course, was like, why the fuck are you saying that? I already accepted the match. Why are you getting all defensive about this? Of course he was going to stunner Sergeant Slaughter. Like, Slaughter was just being kind of annoying.
Yeah, I didn't really get it because, and it's funny, when I watched it, I remembered being a kid. And this was one of the first times I was in Steve Austin's corner because he had agreed to the match.
Right.
And then Slaughter then puts the, you know, stipulation on. He didn't put it in just at the beginning. He waited till Austin had accepted, kind of like a mind games thing. But I thought as an opening segment, I think what's been quite clever about the build here, and I know they're trying to masquerade stuff with Sean's injury and that kind of stuff, but it seems like every week one of the players gets a big moment to shine. And then the next week is somebody else, the next week is somebody else. So they've kind of tied in this whole Tyson, Michaels, Austin, Vince stuff. And every week something else happens that's kind of another nice layer to the story.
So at this point, one of my questions too, because since Slaughter says very specifically he is there on behalf of Vince McMahon, who's not there for some reason, why wasn't he there?
Because he was scared of Steve Austin.
Was that why? Like, there wasn't...
It was a storyline thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering, like, why aren't you there? But, so, Slaughter saying very specifically that, you know, this is by edict of the owner of the World Wrestling Federation, Vince McMahon. At this point, are they building to Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon in the way that we're going to get it? Or is that still not really a thing that they're planning?
It's hard to know. I mean, it would have been around this time they knew they had to start building the Vince thing. So I would imagine that last week when Vince cut the promo, that was probably when they knew, because they didn't know how long Sean was going to be out. Hunter wasn't at the level where biased aside, he was not of the level to be Austin's foil at that point.
No, not at all.
About a year and a half later, he was great at it. But at this point, it was just, he wasn't that level of star yet. So, and it's kind of like that thing where it just kind of fell into their lap. you know, like they'd done all this Vince stuff and now they could pay off. So I think by this point they would have known, because
it seems like they're having Vince intentionally antagonize Austin, right? And now he's doing it through Sergeant Slaughter as well. Because the intro to Retro Raw before, I think the theme song and everything, they did show Vince's interview about Austin, where, you know, Kevin Kelly, the hard-hitting journalist, got Vince McMahon to admit that, no, he does not want Stone Cold Steve Austin to be the World Wrestling Federation champion. Oh, hell no. And that's the bottom line, because Vince McMahon said so, yada, yada, yada. And so it seems very much like we're building antagonistic, I don't know, feelings between Austin and McMahon for sure, but it still seems kind of strange because Vince McMahon is the owner of the World Wrestling Federation. Like, he's not a wrestler. So you kind of wonder where it's going to go and what the point is going to be, I guess. And Austin still, like, you're right about being in Stone Cold Steve Austin's corner for the first time here. I kind of was too, because Sergeant Slaughter was just being so annoying about everything and, like, so overly defensive for no reason that I was like, well, of course you're gonna get stunnered. Of course you are. Like, you're being stupid here. That was a dumb decision. Why didn't you just be like, you're gonna wrestle Rocky Maivia? Austin's like, sure, I'll wrestle Rocky Maivia. Awesome. Cheers. I'm gonna go in the back away from you and your stunners.
Yeah, it was just a weird execution of the segment, but I'm glad that you kind of felt the same way about that being, you know, the kind of Steve Austin maybe turning the tide a little bit. Because this is the first time where they've properly, up until now, Vince has not seen Austin as the sort of, you know, face of the company, but Vince has never done it from a sort of, like, evil boss way.
It's no, more it's because just kinda, Steve Austin would be a terrible face of the company because he, you know, he's kind of a terrible person. Like,
but then last week was the first time where Vince kind of gave you his opinion, and then this week, this is the first instance where we're seeing that, is Vince stacking the deck here? Because I think JR says in commentary quite a few times, you know, Shawn Michaels isn't wrestling on this show.
Yeah, in the main event, JR makes that very clear. He says it's not fair that Steve Austin is wrestling here tonight. You know, Shawn Michaels doesn't have to wrestle tonight. Why does Steve Austin? And that's a fair point, right? Like,
and what else was great about that was they were hyping up. He has to step into the ring 6 days before WrestleMania with the Intercontinental Champion. As right. If it's like you're stepping into the ring with Godzilla.
I mean, granted, it is the Intercontinental Champion that he beat for the Intercontinental Championship and then just gave it back to him. But, you know, whatever.
What have I told you about logic and retro, Rossandra?
I'm just saying, I'm just pointing out that is the story.
So we then get a rematch for the ages from 2 weeks ago. Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie against the Quebecers. How the fuck do you break this down?
This is so terrible. Like,
oh, so we
was
have
it worse this week than 2 weeks ago? Because it was really bad 2 weeks ago.
I think this one was more unintentionally comedic.
Okay.
Like, so it was worse, but it was like it almost had slapstick, like, as part of the gag. So they're having this match, and the New Age Outlaws appear on the ramp. They're wearing tuxedos. They wheel out a dumpster. They're drinking champagne, celebrating with blow-up dolls. And then in the end,
sex dolls with Cactus Jack shirt on.
Of course, of course. And it seems like Cactus Jack's going to maybe be getting the win in the actual match when Billy Gunn hits the ring, causes the DQ. Then Road Dogg comes down, gets involved. They hit my champagne bucket. And then Billy Gunn, like, does this, like, middle rope thing where he breaks the card table over Chainsaw Charlie's head, and then the Outlaws do a spike pile driver onto a chair. I know that the New Age Outlaws and Cactus Chainsaw thing's not really been your thing so
no.
far. What did you make of the? Was this a good go home angle for the match or not?
I mean, it was fine, I guess. I don't know why this is happening. Like, I just don't care about these two teams fighting each other, I guess. And I feel like I should. I mean, Chainsaw Charlie is mental, and Cactus Jack is also mental. Cactus Jack is way too easily distracted, though, because, you know, Road Dogg brings out the champagne and the rose, and Billy Gunn brings out a dumpster, and they're wearing tuxedos for some reason, and I don't understand why. Like, I watched the whole segment. I don't understand why they're wearing tuxedos to go on a date with sex dolls and how that's, like, relevant to anything that's going on? Are they trying to highlight that they are classy and Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack belong in the dumpster? I don't think they've even put that much thought into it. They're just like, hey, tuxedos. I mean, Billy Gunn has a pretty great purple vest on or waistcoat. Like, it's a great color on him. That was nice. But no, I don't really understand why this was happening. And I mean, the Quebecers versus Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack was atrocious. Like, Pierre was way too shiny and it was off-putting. And I just, Cactus Jack is way too easily distracted because when Billy Gunn and Road Dogg come out, he just leaves. Like, he just leaves the apron to go and wander down the ramp to talk to them or something, leaving Chainsaw Charlie in the ring. And it's like, wasn't the whole setup for this, don't leave your partner? Isn't that what you tried to retaliate in teaching them last week when you hung Road Dogg upside down? Was, I mean, the whole story is that you're just leaving your partner again? Like, that's not a good idea. You deserve to get beaten.
It's an interesting way to present it. The thing that was also kind of funny to me when I was watching it, I can't remember if they did it at this point, if they did it a segue later on, but remember when JR and Cole were like really putting it over, dumpster match, first time ever, blah 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 blah.
Yeah, JR's like, I've called a lot of matches in my career, but never have I called a dumpster match. This is the first time in history we're gonna see a dumpster match. I mean, is the premise of a dumpster match just you have to go in a dumpster?
Yes, but
right,
but I think looking at it, you know, especially for a lot of people who are listening to this podcast who are younger or didn't watch at the time, when you watch this stuff now and they say, oh, a dumpster match, you're like, what? Like, Extreme Rules has five matches. So, but in 1998, they hadn't done a lot of that stuff. WWF had rarely done stipulation matches in any way, shape, or form. So I get what they were trying to do. I just don't think that 20 years later, it really holds up, because the dumpster thing, they've already done the big angle you can do with it, which is the one where, you know, they get carted off the stage. Mm-hmm. There's not really much else that can be done. So
no, they just keep wheeling out a dumpster every week as a prop. Like, all right, Billy Gunn really likes dumpsters, apparently. Is
all I will say, though, is the New Age Outlaws humped their dumpster around and they were the tag team champions. Mojo Rawley shipped his Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal statue to London and never got a push.
I know, right? I mean, to be fair, they are using different dumpsters because every dumpster has been different. Because last week, remember, it was all graffitied and said Jack's House and Badass and stuff. And then sometimes the dumpster is blue and sometimes the dumpster is white.
There's a lot to unpack, Sandra.
It's true. It's very true. But I don't know. I just kind of got the feeling that when Billy Gunn gets in the ring and attacks Cactus Jack, it's not because Cactus Jack was about to win, because I don't think he was. Like, I don't think the match was nearing completion in any way. He had not hit a finisher. He had not done really much of anything. I think Billy Gunn just realized this match is terrible and I don't want to watch it anymore. And, you know, I can sympathize with that.
So we then go from that. We get Sandra's favorite, Bop It Slam of the Week.
I love Bop It so much.
Where we see Austin giving, Michael's giving Austin some sweet chin music from a couple of weeks ago. And up next, Steve Blackman, who is an enigma.
He really is.
Is going to be facing off against Double J Jeff Jarrett, but the only problem is that Double J Jeff Jarrett is on a horse, because he, you know, of course he is. Now, that's his thing. He is on a horse, and it's glorious, and I feel like there's more things lighting up this week than there did last week.
No, like, he's added things every week, because last week he added the horse, but I feel like the harness is more lighting up this week, and I feel like there are more lights on the jacket as well.
Yeah, everything looked lighter.
It
felt like he had, you know, really sort of like went into the jacket and just tried to add like as many layers of lights as he could to it. It looked great.
It was amazing. All for it. Now, I mean, I didn't know who he was going to be facing at first, right? So Tony Chimmel introduces Tennessee Lee so that he can introduce Jeff Jarrett, because this is all a big production. And I'm kind of surprised. I'm really impressed by the horse not getting freaked out about the lights and like being in the dark and all the flashing lights and stuff. You'd think that would kind of spook a horse. But no, this horse is a trooper and just kind of, it's going for it. And then when I saw that Steve Blackman was facing Jeff Jarrett, I thought, yes, it's a battle of light up things. This is exactly what I wanted. Didn't I say that I wanted this a few weeks ago?
You did say that you wanted a light up battle, because that's a thing.
Because But the problem is that Steve Blackman's glow sticks are barely even glowing during this entrance. Opportunity missed. I am so upset about this.
My favorite bit of this was, so they start the match, and the match is, it goes 2.5 minutes. And it's bad. Oh, it's bad. And the crowd are like silent. And then like Steve Blackman tries to like almost like, you know, get his comeback on and nobody cares.
Did you notice the part where he does the leapfrog and then pauses? Because I feel like Steve Blackman has not looked this bad before. Like he looks awful in this match. He's pausing after everything he does. He's looking around. You can tell he's just very new. And I get like he's very new at this. But there's one point where he does a leapfrog, like the most bored looking leapfrog you could ever do. And then he just sort of lazily jumps backwards into Jeff Jarrett's arms so that he can get slammed or whatever. Like, it was really bizarre and terrible.
But during the match, though, so we have this, you know, terrible comeback and all that kind of stuff. And then Blackman's going for a superplex, but Tennessee Lee grabs his foot during it. And Jeff Jarrett lands on top. Tennessee Lee holds the leg until we've got a new winner on Jeff Jarrett. And I know it's like Carney heel 101, but like I loved that he grabbed the leg. It was just
Lee is putting in a shift here. Tennessee Lee just ended the undefeated streak of Steve Blackman, Kenny,
and for that we should be eternally grateful. And I say New York, New Jersey, 2019, let's get Tennessee Lee in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, why not? Why not at this point? But my favorite part of the match was when I think Blackman was doing his comeback thing or whatever and flexing, going, rawr! And JR goes, Blackman showing some emotion here. He knows what a high-stakes matchup this is for his career. Bless you, JR. Bless you for trying. Because
You can literally sometimes hear JR making his money.
Yeah, like you really can.
With calls. Like you can hear, oh, they paid him an extra 10 grand. A year for getting comments like that in. Mm-hmm. So they also advertise right after this because...
But they also, Tennessee Lee was awesome here because not only did he, you know, hold Steve Blackman's foot and all that kind of stuff so that Jeff Jarrett got the win, but then also he was clever enough to shove Jeff Jarrett into Jack Doan, who had come out from the back to explain to the other referee, hey, shenanigans happened and you should restart the match maybe. So before that conversation could actually happen, Tennessee Lee shoves Jeff Jarrett into Jack Doan, I believe, so that he's down so that he can't explain to the other referee so that Jeff Jarrett can get his hand raised. And then, you know, Blackman starts beating up Jarrett, of course, and he's raging, and Tennessee Lee just books it. Like, he just runs away, and it was gorgeous.
Yeah, it was great. Tennessee Lee stole my heart here. He was tremendous. And Jeff Jarrett got a win, and Steve Blackman's undefeated streak is over. I mean, it's pretty much a winner for everybody, I think.
I'm just upset that they didn't actually have, like, a battle in the dark where they wielded light-up things at each other. I just feel like it's a missed opportunity.
Now, they give a quick plug for the DX public workout that they were doing. This was quite a big event in Boston. I think they showed clips as well that at WrestleMania 11, they'd done one in like Times Square where they had a ring and Lawrence Taylor and Bam Bam Bigelow just beating each other up. But
What is it, just a workout in public? Like, what do you do?
So it's not a workout. Like, they can. So essentially, they've got a ring and they've got like 10,000 fans surrounding it. And DX are going to come out and cut a promo and pretend to do a workout. That's essentially it. And then Steve Austin will come out and they'll hype the pay-per-view. That's the idea. But right. when they were coming out for this, Shawn Michaels was hit in the face with a battery.
Oh.
And he was not pleased.
That sounds unsafe.
It's on a DVD somewhere that he gets hit with it when he's in the ring. And he is just, like, if this was not WrestleMania in the main event, I do not think he would have stayed in the ring at that point.
No, I bet. I mean, well, we've heard how Shawn Michaels deals with situations like that in, I forget where it was, that those riots happened, right?
The London riots? The Charlottesville one.
Yeah. When they were in the ring and thought that he should present something. I can't remember the whole story, but we talked about it like a few months back on Retro Raw, and like they caused riots among the fans because they just left. And
I took three different things that make no sense with each other. I'm very hungover today, ladies and gentlemen. I apologize. Sondra was not referring to the Charlottesville Nazi stuff that happened a couple months ago, which is why I was like, oh yeah, the things. And then Sondra said riots. I somehow thought of the London bombings in 2005.
No, I wasn't talking about that.
So really,
I was talking about the one that was related to wrestling.
I cataclysmically fucked up that segue that Sondra did. So anyway, I can usually hold it together better than this. But anyway, just hearing me slowly lose my mind. We get a limousine pulling up backstage. It is D-Generation X, of course. And Mike Tyson is trying to do the crotch chop, which gives me life every time I see it.
Because he cannot do it. That limo driver, what a gentleman. I mean, his hair and glasses combination was amazing. He actually reminded me of the guy in No Holds Barred.
All right, okay. So, we DX have arrived. We'll see what's going to happen with them. The show is evidence happened with Kane and Undertaker. And now we go to the gravesite of the Undertaker and Kane's parents. Undertaker's sitting there talking to the tombstones. He's in, like, a sweater and some jeans. And he asks for forgiveness for what he's going to have to do, fight his brother Kane. He's only doing this so that the whole family can finally rest in peace. And
is he planning on a murder-suicide pact so that they can all rest in peace together? I was unclear about this.
And then in a very sort of like rare instance of emotion, he tells his parents that he loves them at the end. And you're like, oh, okay, that's new. What did you make of that? Because I know that the last couple of weeks, Undertaker's been involved in some stuff where you've kind of went, that's really bonkers. I'm of course going to be behind that. I can't quite call what side you would come down. I could see you saying that gravesite promo is genius, but I could also see you kind of going, oh, I just want Kane, hurry up.
I just want Kane. Hurry up. This was boring. It was stupid. Like, it's just the Undertaker being the Undertaker and going, I hope you understand, and the devil stands before me in the form of my own flesh and blood, my brother Kane, and please forgive me for the sins I'm about to commit. It's your standard Undertaker rhetoric, right?
I love that you're Undertaker. I feel like is more and more going to go into that kind of like Tommy... What's the guy from The Room?
Tommy Wiseau, I think. I've never actually seen The Room, but...
I think it's Wiseau. That your Undertaker impression seems to be beginning to veer off into that guy at some point. So I just hope that you continue to do it and one week it will just morph. I liked it. It was interesting enough and it was different and I thought it was a good use of Undertaker in the last week of the build because... You know, you couldn't really have him at the arena because then Kane couldn't have done all the shit that he wanted to do. Then you have to find a reason why they're apart. So Undertaker being there at the gravesite, I think, was kind of different enough for me that it worked. But
I guess it's fine. I just don't think the Undertaker's very good at these segments.
No.
I don't think he's very good at delivering them. And that's always been one of my problems with The Undertaker is I don't think he's very good at speaking. When he was yelling on top of the Tron last week, it was better.
Do you know what's funny? I can't wait. When we get to American Badass, he's great at promos.
Is he? I'm intrigued by this. Because he's, like, as the dead man, I have never liked his delivery. I think it's just boring and not great and very formulaic. And, I mean, I guess I understand the emotion that they're going for because, it is kind of heart-wrenching that he's talking to his dead parents and stuff and... But it's never a good sign when I have in my notes willing to serve penance, burn in my own damnation, blah, blah, blah. Like if I'm going like, ugh, he's still talking, that's not a good sign.
I mean, it didn't feel like it. I mean, I know I liked the segments, it's maybe different for me. It didn't feel like it went on like painfully long. Like it could have gone on.
It was fine.
It was what it was. And
I just would have liked to see more emotion, I guess, because his words were saying that he had emotion, but he was just talking in his same Undertaker cadence.
Do you think the more that we've kind of talked about Undertaker and watching Retro Rollback and that kind of stuff, I'd love to hear Mark Calloway talk about the struggle of trying to have that character be, purely fictional or whatever, but also try and be real, because it's kind of an impossible thing to do because whatever you do you're not gonna be able to serve all masters at one time,
right?
Which is probably why the American Badass thing was such a relief that he got to kind of, oh, now I can cut a promo, now I can,
because he can actually be a person.
So But yeah, I thought as well, the good thing about this was Undertaker just gets this kind of little segment at the gravesite, and then Kane's the star of the show. And that's what you should do if Undertaker's going to get the win, you know, at WrestleMania. Which, Sandra knew, I'm not spoiling it for her. And if you...
Okay, it's the Undertaker at WrestleMania. I know who's winning.
And also, if you have never heard that the Undertaker... Yeah, exactly what Sandra just said.
I mean, the streak ended at WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans, where we're going to be this year. Actually, we have an advocate coming along to do a show on the Thursday. Paul Heyman Live for tickets for that. But the streak ended at WrestleMania 30. This is WrestleMania 14. That means that the streak will be alive and well after WrestleMania 14. Therefore, if you didn't know The Undertaker was beating Kane at WrestleMania, you just need to put two and two together there.
But Kane is the star of the show. Kane comes down with Paul Bearer here. Paul Bearer said he's tired of hearing Undertaker crying, whining about his parents. And
I'm with Paul Bearer.
Taker, what, you know, seems to be all about the truth. But the real truth is that Kane has the same powers that The Undertaker has. So to show off his abilities, Kane sends like lightning bolts out the arena. He sets a lightning rig on fire. He like throws something, some sort of lightning bolt at the announcers.
I love that Paul Bearer is like, you know, ooh, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, who's it going to be? And the announcers are like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yep, they're not up for it at all. Then Kane sets a ringside crew member on fire.
He sets an actual man on fire. There is a lightning bolt to a crew member, and he is on fire, and he is running, and he is on fire, and they have to put him out of being on fire because there was an actual man on fire, Kenny.
I mean, people can say that 1998 had its problems, but Kane set a man on fire, Sandra.
He did. He set a man on actual fire. It was so good. It was so good. And all the while, Paul Bearer is, you know, saying, look at Kane, you know, Undertaker, this is your fault. Look at the eye that you put out. It was your fault, Undertaker. You know, you're the one who killed your parents, and it's all your fault. And then I love the ridiculousness of pro wrestling, right? Because then he's like, it's your fault that I brought your brother into the World Wrestling Federation. You know, it was your fault that his eye was put out. It was your fault that he was disfigured. It's your fault that your parents died. It's your fault that he was held captive for 20 years. It was your fault that I brought your brother into the World Wrestling Federation so you can have a match at WrestleMania. Like,
it's so
the
good.
Absurdity of it. It's so good. Like, I fucking love wrestling sometimes. I'm just gonna be disappointed when Kane versus The Undertaker isn't them shooting lightning bolts at each other the whole time.
Did I give this away now? Have you... Right, I'm not gonna say what it is. Have you... I'm sure that you cannot have watch wrestling and not seen clips of this. They have a certain type of match. Undertaker and Kane.
Oh. Is this... Wait.
I mean, if you like fire, Sandra.
Is this when they have an Inferno match?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Really?
At the In Your House following WrestleMania. It's actually, what's so good about it is, like, so, I think Jim Cornette told this story. He was saying the problem with the Inferno match was, is that they can't work to 100% because they can't go anywhere near the fire.
Right. Well, because I remember the Inferno match between, was it Kane and Bray Wyatt?
Yes. And it's not great.
No, it was terrible. It was real bad. Like, the concept of an Inferno match is not good.
But I thought Paul Bearer was tremendous here in kind of his delivery of, like, you know, leaving it all on Undertaker. It was all his fault. The fault of all of this lies with The Undertaker. And
Paul Bearer is also putting in a shift here because he's not only blaming The Undertaker, setting up the whole story with way more emotion than The Undertaker does. Like, he's way more interesting than The Undertaker. He is also the one directing Kane to shoot lightning at things and set things on fire.
He is.
Kane's awesome.
Kane's awesome. The Paul Bearer thing. I mean, this story just gets better and better throughout the next few months anyway. But yeah, and then they end by saying, you know, they will go to the dark side this Sunday at WrestleMania 14 on pay-per-view. Which is so good. Up next, we get the Raw debut of the new Midnight Express because we get DOA. But did you know, Sandra, I just wanted to point this out. DOA were actually coming out on Titan motorcycles, Sandra.
They were coming out on Titan motorcycles. I mean, the premier motorcycles, mass-produced. He said mass-produced at one point, or, like, produced in bulk or something. Did you know, Ken? I mean, they're as fast as Titan rockets, those Titan motorcycles.
I mean, I've never been a car guy, like, or a motorcycle guy. Don't get me wrong, somebody said you can have one car, anyone you want, and pick, like, a nice BMW or Mercedes or something, but I don't get the hard on for motorcycles. And Michael Cole apparently loves a good motorcycle.
I mean, I feel like Michael Cole really wants to fuck these motorcycles.
That could be very true. There's a network show that we will all... oh, God.
I don't think they're going to put that on the network.
No. Well, we'll see how the subscriptions go for the next quarter.
I suppose so.
So we get the DOA facing off against Bombastic Bob and Bodacious Bart.
I'm still giggling about Bodacious Bart, especially. Bob, did you notice that Bob Holly just looks confused about why they're there the whole time? Like, he doesn't look very bombastic. He just looks confused.
I don't think he knows what bombastic means.
I don't think so either. Because he keeps looking around like, wait, am I in this match? What's happening here? And then he'll do a move and then he'll be like, why am I here? What's going on?
So we're getting the DOA versus the New Midnight Express. Before you know it, the Rock and Roll Express come down wearing WWF t-shirts to show Sandra they are no longer in allegiance with the NWA. Did you catch that subtle reference of them wearing WWF t-shirts?
I sure didn't. Nope. I was just more distracted by the fact that I was like, yay, the Headbangers are out here. And then it was like, oh, the Rock and Roll Express look like they've literally arisen from the dead. They look more dead than The Undertaker, who is a dead man.
The 80s were a tough run, man. They were a tough run to get through. I mean, look at Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Rough. Yeah. Greg the Hammer Valentine also not looking great. I mean, we'll talk about Barry Windham in a little while.
But the Rock and Roll Express are down there, and we've got the Headbangers, Sniper and Recon, the Bariquas, the Quebecers. They're trying to hype up this 15-team Battle Royal at WrestleMania. And
it's one of those things where, like, a team comes out and then another team comes out and then it's like, okay, now Sniper and Recon in here. Okay, now Savio and Miguel. Okay, now the Quebecers. Okay, now Jesus and Jose, because, you know, there are two Bariqua teams, Kenny, and that's very intriguing because it's every team for themselves. And this match does not matter at all. And eventually all the teams just get in the ring so they can fight. And Michael Cole has, you know, one of his gems of a line where he's like, speaking of still here, all these teams are still here. Thanks for that, Michael Cole.
Oh, he's so good at this point.
Thanks for that scintillating analysis.
The whole idea here is, you know, to pep up this 15-team Battle Royal, which is going to be awful, just to say.
Oh, it has to be. Because, I mean, so are the Godwins not in the Battle Royal?
They will be in it.
I was just curious. Like, I'm not sad that the Godwins didn't come out here because, you know, the less I see of the Godwins, the better. But they were a noted absence to me. And the crowd just is chanting for LOD the whole time, breaking my heart, because JR has to remind us that Hawk and Animal still aren't talking to each other. LOD are done.
So we have to contend with the Godwins and the Quebecers and the fucking Midnight Express and blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, this is basically just a big angle to promote. To be fair, the idea of all these tag teams being down here and the execution of that was far more interesting than the idea of me having to watch DOA and the New Midnight Express.
True. I mean, none of this was very interesting. It was just kind of there. It was one of those things like, all right, so we're doing this big build, this big battle royal that super doesn't matter.
Does not matter at all.
I think it's for number one contendership, though, isn't it? Or is it just for an opportunity to have a chance at the number one contendership? Because I thought they said it was for a chance to face the New Age Outlaws or the champions after WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah. No, you get a title shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get a title shot. And the more that you get older and you read different stuff, you realize how difficult it must be for Jim Cornette to be in any way happy about this. But he sells it. He's happy he's got the new Midnight Express.
Bless him. Bless him for acting like he cares about the new Midnight Express. Like, Bombastic Bob and Bodacious Bart are the second coming of his, you know, glorious Midnight Express. Oh, boy. I mean, they are terrible. They are so terrible.
They are bad.
I love them. I do. I love the lightning on their pants. I love everything about how terrible they are. I mean, Bodacious Bart, Kenny.
I mean, it didn't make much sense when I was watching it in 1998. It doesn't make any more sense now. It actually makes, I don't know. I mean, I remember Jamie and I were watching it and, you know, we just could not get around the idea of, you know, Bob, like Sparky Plug and one of the Smoking Guns are now the Midnight Express.
Right? But then it's random.
But then, I mean, Jamie remembers all this information with a fine tooth comb and I've, you know, basically the memory of an Alzheimer's patient. But like, we would never have known who the original Midnight Express were, really, because we'd never watched that stuff and before the internet. So I don't even know if, I mean, I know they tell you in commentary, you know, the Midnight Express were an original team, but I don't think that I would have gotten, when I was younger, the gravitas of how mighty they have fallen until you actually, you know, read up a little bit on what Cornette did with them in the 80s and stuff. So God bless Jim Cornette is essentially the message here that
it's
I want
true.
To convey. Up next, I'm very curious to get Saunders' take on this. So we've heard from Steve Austin talking about his WrestleMania match with Shawn Michaels. So now DX are out. They're out with Mike Tyson, obviously, because he's there. Hunter's got the mic first. He tells us that Commissioner Slaughter will be handcuffed to China during the match. Hunter said he's not worried because he owns Owen Hart.
That what's going to happen? China's handcuffed to Slaughter? I know that he said China was going to be handcuffed to something.
She's being handcuffed to Slaughter because Slaughter is the only one that can stop her from interfering.
But Slaughter can't stop China. She's just going to beat him up.
But she's handcuffed to him, so she can't lug his weight around.
I mean, I guess, but she is pretty strong.
I mean, you just kind of have to go with the story, Sandra. That's the...
Apparently so, I do.
He then tells Owen to milk the leg injury for all he can. And then he said... Now, the thing, so... See the usual kind of like, here's my dick thing, right? They don't really bother me, and they kind of make me laugh because they're terrible. Like, I don't think they're offensive. They're just crap jokes, right? But like, this week's one, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but when Triple H did it, I wanted the floor to envelop me because it was so cringeworthy.
So, my question about this one. Do you remember what he said?
Yeah, I've got it here. So, but what I want to say is, what I find interesting about it is that we've got Mike Tyson, biggest star on the planet, who refereed the main event, Michaels, biggest heel in the company, and Hunter's kind of like the kid. He's not really on that level. So it's almost like he's here trying to do all these like, what he said, for all the Tucson ladies out there, I might let you come home with me tonight, and after they get pricked by my cactus, I'll let them play with my prairie dog. I don't even get what that reference means, Sandra.
So, my question about this, is his dick a cactus or a rodent? Because
is his dick either, and it's kind of like a penknife, where you can like put certain parts of it when you want to?
Maybe.
One day it's a rodent, one day it's a cactus?
Because getting pricked by his cactus implies penetration, right? Like, once you're pricked by my cactus, then whatever. Or maybe just, like, having his dick up against you is being pricked by his cactus. And then he's like, I'll let you play with my prairie dog. And he, like, points at his dick and does the swinging motion. And so I'm confused about which portion of the metaphor is actually meant to represent his penis. And I just feel like he's mixing his metaphors here.
I think that no matter what happens in life, no matter who lives or dies, who's in the office or not, who's, you know, won the World Cup, it will never make me not smile that Sandra had to dissect a Triple H penis analogy on a podcast.
I'm just saying, if you ever get Triple H for Inside the Ropes Live, just ask him to clarify.
Okay, sure.
Because I bet that would go incredibly well.
So he does his little shtick. And then, you know, now it's the time for Shawn Michaels. But there's this woman in the crowd, and she's wearing a tank top with DX on each nipple, DX. And I don't want to be in any way misogynistic Can you explain the lady to anyone who's maybe not watched the show? How would you describe this lady?
She is a very large-chested woman who is definitely showing off that she has a chest. Her tank top looks to be kind of like a cut t-shirt that she's cut pretty low so that her tits are kind of out and, you know, ready to play. And, you know, she looks kind of trashy a little bit. She's just really drunk also. Like, you can tell she's pretty inebriated because security is legit holding her back. And so, I mean, whether she's a plant or not, she just kind of looks like she's ready to run into the ring and, I don't know, assault Shawn Michaels, maybe sexually. And yeah, so of course Shawn Michaels has to be like, do you have two nipples for a dime? Because that's his idea of high comedy. And then Hunter's like, are you a double or a triple DX? And she's like, triple DX! Like, I mean, she looks like she could very well be a triple D, you know, because she's a larger woman, so that makes sense.
There's nothing to do with the size of her, but there's just a look in her eyes that terrifies me.
I feel like she was kind of terrifying. Like,
I feel
security was holding her back.
She came across like a sexual predator.
She kind of did, a little bit.
Because what's funny, if you imagine, and in the last kind of 6 months, women have had every platform to say what they should be saying right now and all that kind of stuff. But I just can't imagine if a man at that point had, but would it have worked in the 90s because they didn't really care as much? Like, I just can't imagine a man being able to be, like, ogling over a woman in that way. But then, I guess they did with the puppies thing.
But they totally did, and that's, like, Sable's entire character.
Yeah, so it's hard sometimes to watch through a 2018 lens, this stuff, because I've always said that I try and watch it in the kind of a, you know, you can't watch 1998 pop culture and expect it to live up to 2018, you know, diversity. It's just not the way it's going to be. But
no, it's not, but I can still have a problem with Sean just, you know, going, that's a skank, and that.
And I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying that's where my own point is coming into question. So I'm kind of going, oh. I mean, the lady did look like she could have perhaps, at some point in her life, hung around a hotel where some wrestlers stayed and had a beverage and maybe went to a room.
Very possible. Very possible.
Not confirmed.
No. And totally her prerogative. And if she, you know, she clearly wants to show off her chest and do what she does, and more power to her.
And hey, guys, sometimes, guys, it's a rumor mill. Because let's remember that last year in Metropolis, Sondra was seen getting off an elevator with Jerry the King Lawler and not seen again for 93 minutes. And I questioned her at length about that. And but it turned out that they were not, you know, he was not showing Sondra his prairie dog, but instead they were discussing Superman.
I just threw up a little. Also, Jerry Lawler wasn't even in Metropolis last year, so he did not get invited back after the situation.
My favorite moment was just as a joke, as a mere like funny wee bit when I called you Sondra the Queen Lawler. I thought you were going to hang up on the podcast.
It's just so gross.
So this woman is trying to basically jump the rail to hump any of DX who will have her.
Like, I don't know, is she going to try to hump them, or is she going to try to, like, fight them and then hump them? Because I can't tell. Like, I can't tell if she wants to fight them or just have sex with them.
I think all bets are off.
Like, I feel like it would be really angry sex.
I feel like she would... I apologize in advance for this, but I feel like she'd be the sort of woman that she would, like, you know, you wouldn't really be wanting to do it, so you'd be kind of just going through the motions to get it over with. But you know that right at the end she'd go, you stare at me when you come! Stare at me when you come! And, it would be just this, like, horrible prison moment where you'd have to engage eyes with this person and realize that you're probably never in your life going to feel lower than you do at that moment.
I mean, that just about sums it up, doesn't it?
But so, and then Sean says, to all you really attractive women out there, that's a skank. And we realized that. Which was great of him to point out.
And then, but like, commends anyone who's willing to put DX on their breasts or something.
Do you know what I will say is you can tell the popularity of DX because I can't use these words with you, Sandra. It's annoying because I feel every time you're going, you fucking watch what you're saying here, Kenny.
you just feel me going like, what are you doing? What are you saying?
This lady was here, and in 6 months' time when DX are big babyface stars, there are hot blondes in the crowd, you know, doing the same thing this lady's doing, right. But there's just a different type of lady that does it.
It's a very different demeanor.
I feel like you could take this woman out for a pint though and kind of help her through her troubles.
I mean, I would certainly try. I wouldn't do her, but...
Good. Well, we were all wondering.
That was the real question, right?
God, Sonia, you're so self-involved about your potential shags. So, Sean basically talks about, you know, the fight between Vince and Austin, and Vince said he didn't want Austin to be the champion, but Michael said, you know, while he appreciates that, he doesn't care what Vince McMahon thinks, doesn't matter what he thinks. Austin better forget about all the WWE brass because the WWF titles are in the waist of Shawn Michaels. And my favourite bit is when Shawn Michaels asks Mike Tyson a series of questions. And Mike Tyson chooses to only reference Shawn Michaels with one word. Heartbreak.
Because they ask Mike Tyson what's going to happen if Stone Cold gets in his face. He's like, I'll knock him out. And then they're like, you know, and who's the icon or whatever. You are Heartbreak.
I know that you hate Mike Tyson the person, and I'm not saying you should in any way change that. But wasn't there just a sheer moment of joy of... You are Heartbreak! Like, there's just a moment of joy there.
He's so bad at this. Like, Mike Tyson is so bad at this, right?
You've got to think about how culturally significant must he have been where they were like, hey, we're going to pay you like $3.5 million. Just say whatever you want to say. If you can get...
This is the man who's brought us Cold Stone. This is the man who brought us Stephen Stone Cold that one time.
I like to imagine, though, that this took Mike Tyson 4 hours of memory skills to just remember Heartbreak.
Right. He can't get... Like, he doesn't understand full nicknames. I love that he's calling Shawn Michaels Heartbreak. It makes me laugh so hard.
You are Heartbreak! So good.
He's so bad. He's so ineffective at everything. It's baffling to me that this is the man that turned around the company.
I guess it's difficult as well because now we're in a kind of social media era where everything's kind of scrutinized all the time. There wasn't a high bar in the late 90s with stuff like that. Like, it was, you could kind of get away with stuff. Whereas now it's like, I mean, Ronda Rousey has never even came close to blundering as much as Mike Tyson did.
No, not at all. Ronda Rousey's promo skills are incredible compared to Mike Tyson here.
And Ronda Rousey has not mentioned Nikolai Volkov once?
No, she has not. Nor Bruno Sammartino.
So obviously Mike Tyson helps do the, you know, you are Heartbreak. I guess overall, take away, I mean, I know what you think about the Hunter stuff. Talk to me about Sean's promo. This was Sean's last chance to do a promo, to sell WrestleMania, to sell that he's facing Austin. It's maybe going to be his last match of his career. Unpack the promo that he cut.
I genuinely don't remember most of the promo because I just got really bored of him talking. I was more focused on the, you know, awesome 90s collarless dress shirt and multiple braids that he was rocking. It was quite a look. Mr. Sandor even commented on it.
Michael's hair was, I mean, there's risks that you take sometimes when you're younger.
It's true.
I thought it was quite the look, but
I genuinely like, it's not just because of my, you know, I hate Shawn Michaels and I hate Triple H, and I do hate them quite a lot. And I was annoyed that he was just like, look at this skank in the front row, and just like, you know, disparaging women and being like, you know, oh, let's make boob jokes because that's awesome. But I thought the promo wasn't that great. I just thought it was boring. Like, I was just kind of zoning out. And I realized at one point that I hadn't heard the last minute of what he said. And I didn't really think it was worth rewinding because I figured it was probably just like, I'm going to beat Steve Austin or whatever. Right. Is that essentially what he said? Did he say anything more interesting than that?
I mean, I think here's just my interpretation of it. Not to say it's right or wrong. I think the first half of the promo sucked. But I think the second half was really good because the first half was him doing, like you say, the DX shtick. Because what's, you know, with Michaels, when he's hit a nerve with you and you've actually complimented him is when he is being serious about stuff. Yeah. And in the second half of this promo, that's what he was doing. He was essentially calling out this Vince McMahon-Steve Austin feud that why would people be talking about a feud with those two when he's the WWF champion? He's the guy who should, you know, and the Shawn Michaels character, everything's crumbling around him. You know, WrestleMania is meant to be his big, you know, his main event in WrestleMania is the champion. Mike Tyson's the referee. So they have to try and get Tyson at DX to take that away. Vince McMahon, Steve Austin's rivalry is taken over from his spotlight. So it's like everything's crumbling apart and he's trying to, you know, clutch onto everything. So I thought that was an interesting part of it. And when he was talking about Austin, it's almost like Shawn Michaels knows that he has been defeated, but he's trying his best to like fight that he's going to win. And
maybe it just doesn't help that like he sounds very much like he's on his way out, and I know that he is on his way out. So
this is the last promo of active wrestler Shawn Michaels. We will see other incarnations of him where he's not a wrestler. But the next time we hear him do a promo as a wrestling character is July of 2002.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not sad about that. Like, I'm just really not that sad that he's not going to be around for a little while. Because, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I know the outcome. Maybe it's just because I know, like, there isn't that much drama in it for me. But, I mean, some of the best feuds, you know the outcome, and there's still drama in it. I mean, even Kane and Undertaker, like, I've given The Undertaker a lot of crap today, but that angle is great. Like, even though I know The Undertaker's winning and that upsets me, the drama of the story with him and Kane is still really, really good. I don't know. I just don't think Shawn was great here. I think you made it sound a lot more interesting than Shawn Michaels did on the show.
Well, I mean, the thing is, when I hang about with you, I end up doing what you do. I create my own fucking storylines in my head.
I'm a bad influence, apparently.
For me, do you know what it kind of reminded me of a little bit is like when Cena cut that original promo and he was like goofy the first half and then really serious the second half. Mm-hmm. The goofy thing didn't really bother me because I'm just going to accept that that's what he is, and at that point it was fine. But I understand why people would have such a problem with it. And like here, I think some people wouldn't have a problem with the DX stuff just because either they don't want to hear what actually is saying, or they're blocking it out, or they agree with it, or whatever the mindset would be. It was an interesting kind of comparison in my head, kind of going, so when Cena's hokey, is that like when Shawn Michaels is being like a degenerate? And then when both guys actually come together and have serious promos, then they're really good.
Yeah, I would say that's a fair comparison for sure.
Jennifer Flowers is going to be at WrestleMania 14, Sandra, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most famous president dick that you can suck compared to 0. How excited are you to see Jennifer Flowers at WrestleMania 14?
I mean, I'm not really sure what scale you're going for here,
but...
Oh, okay. So Jennifer Flowers is going to be there. That's fine. You know, like, she makes me laugh in these promos because she's like, hey, it's the 90s. Come on out of the closet. Don't live in denial any longer. It's okay to be a World Wrestling Federation fan. Like, okay, Jennifer Flowers. It was so funny because when Jennifer Flowers was on the television and I was watching Retro Raw earlier today, Mr. Sandra walked into the room and he goes, Jennifer Flowers? For fuck's sake. And I was like, that's a thing. She's going to be at WrestleMania. And he goes, is Stormy Daniels going to be at this year's WrestleMania? And I said, you know what? Fair question. If this were 1998, I think Vince McMahon would have invited her.
I also love the idea that, like, 3 years ago, you know, Mr. Saundra would have been, you know, the kind of wrestling veteran knowledge person in the house. And now it's you sitting watching 1998 WWF with him going, were they in it? And you're like, yep, yep.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my, how the tables have turned. Because he was watching right around this time, so he would have seen some of this. But, I mean, he wouldn't have seen pay-per-views and stuff, I don't think.
So, yeah, Jennifer Flowers is going to be there. Up next, we get Farouk versus Chains. Farouk sends the Nation of Domination to the back. He's got this. The match goes a whopping 3 minutes and 38 seconds because Farouk has basically got the upper hand. And then Rock gets in the ring to hit Chains with the chair. But Farouk tells him to stop. And Rock kind of puts the brakes on. And then by accident...
Heavy, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, by accident, inverse commas, he hits Farouk with a chair. DQ, Farouk wins by DQ. Rock's like kind of pretending that he feels sympathy for Farouk, calls the Nation out there, wants to help their fearless leader. And then Jim Ross said, what was it he said? The line was, it looked like it was on purpose to me unless Rock has some problem with depth perception.
Yeah, he said something about the Rock's depth perception being a problem. Yeah, so this was, I mean, Farouk versus Chains wasn't very good, right? And it was just kind of meant to set up this whole Rocky Maivia thing. And everyone's reactions are so incredibly cartoonish here, which was hilarious. That was the funny part to me, because Rock is just being a prick, right? At this point, and you know, we know that Rock is, you know, he has a tendency to cause disqualifications, and then his, you know, Nation of Domination people lose. Because we actually saw right before the match footage of Ken Shamrock and The Rock from last week with him beating the ever-loving shit out of Ken Shamrock with that awful, awful chair shot to the head that makes me super uncomfortable and I wish they would stop replaying it. And we did get the stipulation from commentary that if The Rock is disqualified on Sunday at WrestleMania, then Ken Shamrock will win the title. Ken Shamrock made that be a stipulation because he was like, The Rock always comes with a chair. The Rock always causes a DQ. And I don't want to be in this match if he's just going to cause a disqualification. And then, you know, I will win, but I won't win the title. And so I think that's a fair point for Ken Shamrock, you know? And so that it does add an interesting wrinkle to the match for sure, which I like quite a bit. But really, this is Rock just being a prick to Farouk. I mean, even if he would have just hit Chains with the chair and not hit Farouk with the chair, it's still just him being a prick because Farouk clearly had Chains in hand. Like, Chains was not going to beat Farouk here. Farouk was doing just fine on his own. And Rocky was just being annoying at this point. And then, of course, he, you know, accidentally hits Farouk with the chair. The rest of the Nation jogging down and looking so confused and just overacting their confusion, going, what? What could possibly have happened here? And then The Rock doing his crazy eyes, going like, oh no, what have I done? What has occurred here? This is terrible. And then, I mean, Rocky like shaking his head as he walks up the ramp and just shaking his head like, oh, drat, I can't believe that happened. And then just does the eyebrow to the camera.
He's the best at this point. He really is. Like,
they're all so cartoonish and it's so funny to me.
Yeah, but I think that's part of the reason The Rock had such a success was the cartoony kind of nature of, and I think that's what worked about the attitude, I guess, was, yeah, Austin, who was this kind of anti-authority, everyday working man, and then you had The Rock, who was this kind of, like, idiot
prick
that was really full of himself, but actually was quite funny. And that's kind of, I guess they were different enough, really, that helped, because if Austin and Rock had been more similar, maybe it wouldn't have worked as well later on.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they couldn't be more different, really. In a lot of ways.
So, yeah, I do continue to enjoy the dissension of the Nation. I think it's actually played out really well every week. And I think what's good about it is that the Nation members are not taking a side, really, and that's what's making it interesting, because eventually they're going to have to take a side.
Right, because right now they just look kind of confused by the whole situation. Like, why did you hit him? And Rock's like, no, it was totally an accident, you know? And we know that it did not look like much of an accident, you know? Like, he pretty clearly just hit Farouk in the head with the chair. But it's interesting, because who are the Nation going to go with? Are they going to go with... They kept making the joke, like, he's the chairman of the Nation of the Domination... Or the Nation of Domination, not Nation of the Domination. But they kept saying, he's the chairman. Ha, ha, ha. Isn't that hilarious? Because he has a chair and we're calling him the chairman. But I like the way the nation is playing out. I really do. I think, you know, the rest of the guys just kind of look like, why can't we get along?
Yeah, and I think the nation is one of the... It doesn't get talked about a lot. You know, Undertaker and Kane is kind of the most memorable story from this point in time. But what's kind of fun is, like, seeing that the Sable and Luna thing actually is really good.
Yeah.
And but all they do in the Sable thing, they do something that they've rarely ever done. They hid Sable's weaknesses for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, she was limited to what she said in the mic. And designed to make her look great. So
yeah, no, it's been a masterclass in accentuating someone's positives, which in Sable's case is like she looks hot, essentially, and hiding her weaknesses. It's been wonderful the way they've been doing it. Like, I'm pleasantly surprised by the Sable story. We'll get to, you know, Sable a little bit more later on, but and you know, the nation too. Mark Henry is not a great wrestler at this point, to put it mildly. But they just have him be kind of big and he's around. And I feel like, you know, sometimes they do put him in matches and that's problematic, but they have it go pretty short, which is good.
Yeah, it's a good story. I'm looking forward to how it plays out. But up next, we have a video package highlighting the entire feud that was too big for WrestleMania. Barry Windham versus Bradshaw.
I mean, this was supposed to be on WrestleMania at one point.
No, it was not maybe a WrestleMania.
No, but I'm just like, because they were building, obviously, dissension. Was there ever a time that they were like, maybe this will blow off at WrestleMania?
I mean, maybe they initially were thinking about it, but MD with a fucking brain after a week would just be like, I mean, it's all, you should almost be charged with letting Barry Windham wrestle in that gear.
It's terrible. Oh, the chaps. I mean, JR's like, this is not going to be pretty, folks. I'm like, it's already not pretty. Look at them. But yeah, this video package was quite something because apparently the story goes, Kenny, that as Bradshaw became a star, Windham got jealous. Apparently that was the story they were telling. Now, I missed the part where Bradshaw became a star because I think he is super boring. But apparently he was just becoming a star and was on the rise and Windham didn't like it. And then wanted to, you know, be NWA champion and then join the NWA and cost Bradshaw the chance at the NWA championship. Dastardly, dastardly Windham. I mean, what even?
There's a lot to unpack here, really. I mean, you've got Barry Windham and Bradshaw who, you know, they came together as the new Blackjacks. And we loved them for that. And that's all we wanted them to be, was men with Yosemite Sam mustaches with bull ropes who came in and tried to murder people. That's what we wanted.
I mean, that's not what I wanted, because it meant that my stalker was dead and gone.
Well, yeah, you're fucking... It's like you're watching a burning effigy of him now.
I know, it's not good. So, it's not good at all.
So they're in the Blackjacks, and then Barry Windham turns on Bradshaw to join the NWA. Because he thinks that's going to revitalize his career even more. But then again, anyway.
Barry Windham is an exercise in poor decision making.
So we get Barry Windham versus Bradshaw here on TV for free, you know, giving away a pay-per-view quality match here. It goes 3 minutes.
Giving this one right away, aren't they?
3 minutes and 5 seconds. We've got the Rock and Roll Express trying to keep an eye on Cornette.
Which I had totally forgotten until JR said something like, oh, I guess they would have a score to settle with Cornette because Cornette had the Midnight Express attack the Rock and Roll Express last week. Totally hadn't even occurred to me why the Rock and Roll Express were out there, because I just forgot, because that's how scintillating the story is.
Bradshaw basically looks like he's been told, can you just go and try and give Barry Windham as many concussion shots with punches that you can?
It does seem to be his aim. I mean, Barry Windham is in rough enough shape. He does not need this.
How does he look worse with more clothes on?
I don't know. It's baffling, right?
I mean,
I don't understand.
He's an enigma, Sondra. He really is just a man that we can't seem to work out. He was a stalker. Then he decided to become a blackjack. Then he went to the NWA.
Got a headband.
And he was, so his whole, the whole idea was that Barry Windham was jealous of Bradshaw, so Barry Windham was going to go with the NWA to become a star, because Bradshaw had apparently become a star on the other side. There is no point during this match where Barry Windham looks like he has a fighting chance against Bradshaw.
No, not at all.
So I just question Barry Windham's life choices, really.
I said, I mean, he isn't exercising poor decision making. I mean, even down to the point that, you know, Cornette gets so distracted by the Rock and Roll Express and is just like raging that they're there. They don't even climb over the barricade. They're just standing behind the barricade. They're just standing there. They're doing nothing. And Cornette's raging that they're even there. And then he's like, Barry Windham, look, the Rock and Roll Express are here. That's terrible. And Windham is so distracted by this that he just has to go and stand and stare at the Rock and Roll Express for no reason, because they're not doing anything. They look like they can barely move. And then Bradshaw just wins with a roll-up because distraction. I mean, I guess at least it's done, so that's nice. And then the Midnight Express come out to beat up Bradshaw too, because why not, I guess?
My question for you is, did Bradshaw and Barry Windham, the blow-off, did it live up to the hype that you had, Sandra?
I mean, I would say it lived up to the hype in that there was no hype. And so that was exactly what I expected it to be. It's just a thing that was there. And I've liked some of the really crap NWA stuff for being so, just so terrible, right? But this was just boring and dumb.
I don't know why it popped me so much, but on this show, seeing the Rock and Roll Express with WWF Attitude t-shirts on, it just feels like, it feels like your granddad trying to rap.
they seriously look like they could be your granddad. Like, they look like they've been wheeled out of some sort of home and they don't know why they're there.
My fear in life, if I met Robert Gibson, I mean, I saw Ricky Morton rape a pizza one time, but we've discussed that. Well, but apparently I can't say that because me wishing that on an inanimate object, anyway. I mind.
Go into it.
I love that you're on my sounding board. Don't do it. but if I met Robert Gibson, you're confronted with the thing, what eye do you look at?
That's true.
Because one's away at the shop, the other one's come back with the change, and you don't know which one to look at.
I mean, you did manage to interview Shawn Michaels on stage.
But his only turns up sometimes. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
Yep. It's something to do with, like, I don't know if it's how tired you are or whatever it is, but I don't know why or when, but sometimes it's very noticeable, and other times you almost can't find it.
Interesting.
Yeah, the Rock and Roll Express and WWF t-shirts, they were great. I don't know what I would do with Robert. Now, somebody had told me, because I did know somebody recently who had a gammy eye, and I was told to look directly to the kind of nose in between.
Right.
And that's just asking for trouble, because then you've got two eyes staring at you and you're looking in the middle of them. And I'm sorry, with all the best willpower in the world, you're not going to stay looking at that nose. You're going to default to an eye. And it's probably going to be the wrong one.
I just want to be present if you ever do meet Robert Gibson, just to see your conundrum here, to where you're just like, I don't know what to do.
Robert, I'm going to square with you, pal. I don't want to look at the gammy eye. What one's the good one? Give me a wee, wee click on the side that I need to look at.
Just establish right away. Establish the rules.
Yeah. WrestleMania Millennium Moment of Muhammad Ali is the special referee at WrestleMania 1, which I feel like they don't, I mean, I know they talk about it sometimes, but I feel they should talk about that more. Muhammad
they
Ali.
Probably should, because I kind of forget that it happened.
Up next we get the Sable and Sonny double cover award thing, for them being the highest selling edition in the history of the magazine. I mean, it only lasted 2 years, so fine. But, Sonny wasn't able to be there because she was under the weather, aka she was found snuggled under a massive boatload of cocaine, no doubt. So Sable's here instead with Mark Merrow.
Seem weird that they were doing this Raw magazine presentation award and Sonny's not even there. It's like, oh, we're going to present it to Sonny and Sable, except for Sonny's not even here, so Okay.
Now, I want to ask you about Mark Meadows' casual gear.
His casual gear is incredible. I mean, I'm trying to remember exactly what he was wearing. He didn't look that different to his general demeanor. He was wearing jeans, right? And then a cut-off t-shirt?
Light blue jeans, and then he had like a Levi's shirt that had been ripped into a vest.
The sleeves are off.
Yeah. But then he had his marvelous Mark Meadow bandana and...
Yeah, so he still had his whole bandana thing going on and his sunglasses and whatnot. So he still looked very much like marvelous Mark Meadow. I just love the idea that that's how he goes out on the town.
But I just like the idea. I don't think Mark Meadow's given enough credit here for, like, even when he comes out to do casual stuff, he manages to maintain the Mark Meadow gimmick in it.
Oh, he still looks like a smarmy prick and he sounds like a smarmy prick. You know, because he says, I love this, where he's like, you know... Sable has risen to prominence riding my coattails. You know, she's just been in my shadow the whole time. Or I forget what exactly he says. But he's like, I want Sable to enjoy this moment, this one time. He makes it very clear that he wants her to enjoy exactly one moment, not two. One time he is going to allow her to enjoy a moment and he is going to leave while she enjoys this. As though he is being so magnanimous. Like, I'm going to leave and let her have the spotlight for one moment.
When she's winning
the fucking award.
What I love the most about all this is, like, you know, so yeah, you're totally right in the sort of narrative that you're giving us there. But essentially what it comes down to in the end is he was really protective of you, but the fans wanted to see your tits.
Yeah.
And you made your choice. But then, you know, if she hadn't made that choice, would she have met the love of her life, Brock Lesnar, and had multiple children by him and now have to sit on a Lilo every day as a seat? You know, who knows?
I mean, the choices we make in life, right?
Can you imagine Brock Lesnar pumping Sable up the arse? And can you imagine that visual?
I mean, now you've put it into my head and it's... I feel like it's ingrained there. Thank you for that, Kenny. It's a disturbing visual. It's not something I ever thought I would imagine. But if I was
Sable, right? So, you know, I'm a woman, big jugs... Got a lot of leather outfits. If I married Brock Lesnar, you're not telling me that at least one time you went, have a seat, I've got something for you. Puts her theme song on.
With the whips and everything.
With the whips and comes out with a whip and a wee leather gear to have a wee night with Brock.
Oh, I'm sure that's happened. I'm sure that's happened. I mean, one of the interesting things here is that Sable is wearing an evening gown instead of a catsuit.
She is, because she's trying to be a little bit more upmarket. She's getting an award here. So, and Vince Russo...
It actually reminded me a little bit of early Sable. Because remember when Sable used to accompany Wildman Mark Meadows and she was wearing the blue sparkly dress?
Yep. We also have Vince Russo, the editor-in-chief of WWF Publications. He's going to present the plaque to Sable.
When I saw him, I was just like, oh, for fuck's sake, it's Russo. Ugh.
As you say, Mark Meadow basically lets Sable have her moment and decides to go back to the dressing room and let her have her time. Vince Russo presents Sable with a plaque. Kevin Kelly says, you know, Sonny couldn't be here tonight since she's under the weather, but we all look forward to seeing her at WrestleMania when she's in the free-for-all just sniffing coke. Although, do you know what? A night out with Sonny in 1997 taking coke would have probably been a great night out. Let's
it
not lie to ourselves.
Would have been pretty fun.
Let's not lie. And by coke, I mean,
I guess you had the chance, and what was that, 2012?
Oh, God, that was... The idea of going to a strip club with her...
I just love that she wanted to take you to a strip club.
I know, and I literally chose a steak pie supper over it.
It was the right decision.
Oh, it was so good, that steak pie. Anyway, so Vince Russo... So Kevin Kelly says that, you know, Sonny's not here, blah, blah, blah. Russo presents Sable with a plaque, and then, of course, Goldust and Luna come off, and then, like, Russo basically gives Luna the plaque. Like, so there's supposed to be a way that Luna's supposed to somehow grab the plaque, right?
Yeah.
For Sable's face. Russo just gives it to her!
Yeah, because he's the worst. Like, this scene illustrates that Russo is the worst. I mean, Mark Miro is not wrong. I mean, the richness of it coming from Mark Miro, and he's like, you didn't protect her, you didn't help Sable, you know, after he like booked it when Kane came out to attack Sable last week, right? But I mean, Miro's not wrong. Russo did nothing to help her here. He gave Luna the plaque, so of course Luna's going to hit Sable over the head with the plaque.
My favorite thing. So bear in mind that so far with Sable outfits, we've had evening gowns. We've had she had the potato sack on, then she took it off and she had the bikini underneath it, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Vince Russo not only provided the murder weapon, but then as Sable's lying there, he decides to put his suit jacket over her thighs.
Yep. The idea that they're covering Sable up for modesty, right? Like,
At this point.
Because, and I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to be really nice and make her a sympathetic character. And, you know, because Luna, you know, rips Sable's dress. So her ass is just hanging out and everything. And you can see, you know, her garters and whatnot. So if it were anyone else, if it were any other woman being, like, humiliated by having her dress ripped and her ass hanging out, then, yeah, you'd be like, you want to cover them up because you want to give them some modesty. You want to, you know, that's a kind thing to do. But this is Sable we're talking about. Like, Sable, who stripped off the potato sack and was like, I mean, her ass was more out in the bikini than it was here. I guess time she's not, you know, getting to choose that her ass is hanging out, and that's part of the problem. Sable, like, sells that plaque shot like she has died. She covers her face the rest of the time. Like, disfigurement or something.
I would rather that she oversells than undersells. So, like,
100%. I'm commending her.
Oh yeah, no, I'm just backing you up. But I think that's sometimes I think the inclination sometimes is like, you know, do you? So I admit, like, an example in WCPW, they wanted me to do a spot with Joseph Connors, and I was like, and so the idea was that he was gonna bring me over the guardrail and do like a move to me, mm-hmm. and I was just like, I don't feel comfortable with this because I don't know how to take it, and then I would hate like me taking it for me to get up too soon or to do anything like I'm like diminishing what's happening. So then anyway, the spot that we came up with was that I was Cody Rhodes' personal ring announcer, which originally was a bayface thing, but now it's kind of becoming a heel thing because why would he have me come out and just bitch about his opponents? And I was basically saying, I'm going to stand front row and watch Cody win the WCPW championship. And then Joseph Connors comes up and basically shoves me back and my drink goes all over me. So I fall through a crowd of people onto the floor. And then I walked from like where that was all the way to where the back is. And the whole time I was just having a strop publicly about mm-hmm. it. Now, I think I oversold that about 10 million percent than I needed to, but I think it's always safer to oversell than undersell. And Sable did a great job here, actually. She sold it like she had been, you know, murdered.
Because part of me wonders if she, like, was starting to laugh or smile or didn't know what to do with her face, so she was like, I will just hold my hands over my face the whole time.
Is it a bad decision? I've often thought about, see if you take a wrestling move, right? And you say with a match on TV, so you take a stunner and you're pinned. You kind of need to think about what your facial expression is going to be.
Yeah, you do.
Eyes shut, eyes open, what goes on?
Because you don't want to just be Steve Blackman and have no facial expression.
Nobody wants to be Steve Blackman. I thought this segment was really good, though. Again, it was effective in the sense that Luna got to do something horrible to Sable, and it made you want to see Sable get her hands on her. So,
and it made Sable more sympathetic, and it made Mark Miro still feel like a prick because he left her alone again, right? And mm-hmm. he's not helping. Like, Mark Miro is not helping Sable in any of these situations. He did it under the guise of wanting her to have her moment, but when he sees Luna come out, it's not like he ran to Sable's defense or anything. He was just like, oh, I'm sorry, I was gone. I trying to let her have her moment, and then yells at Vince Russo for not helping Sable. I don't know. I thought this was really well done.
And then the main event time, which is nuts, you know, Rock and Steve Austin main event, and then in a year's time, their main event.
Oh, that's true.
JR, I thought, did an excellent job kind of selling how unfair this was. And really, I think this was the beginning of when it wasn't hammered home as sort of like subtly as it is nowadays, but like they were putting in your mind, Vince McMahon stacked the deck here against Steve Austin. Like,
yeah,
Sean doesn't have to wrestle, but he does, and then not only is he wrestling The Rock, but he's got the whole nation to contend with, and that's going to be him in jeopardy health-wise for the pay-per-view. And I thought JR did a really good job of putting that across.
Yeah, I think he absolutely did. And it was, you know, I don't think it was overdone either. Like, there was one point where I was like, is JR going a little too far with it? But I don't think he did. I think it was good to sell that this was unfair to Stone Cold Steve Austin. And, you know, I'm never a big fan of saying, like, a wrestler having to wrestle on a show is a punishment or whatever, because it's like, that is his actual job, is to be a wrestler and to have matches on TV. So, and Stone Cold Steve Austin, like I said earlier, I mean, he didn't deny the match. Like, he accepted the match. He said he was going to do it, which is why Sergeant Slaughter was just being annoying in the opening segment. And it was such a weird execution. But I mean, this was, yeah, I like the fact that they're kind of putting that in your head. Like, Vince McMahon is stacking the deck against Steve Austin. He doesn't want Steve Austin to be the champion. Maybe he wants Steve Austin to get hurt. Maybe he wants the nation to attack Steve Austin. He maybe wants something to happen to him, because the nation, it kind of made me laugh in the match when Austin was wielding a chair against the nation, like, because he had the chair open, like, and he's just like, I don't know, like, he's gonna ram the legs into the nation or something. And of course it allows Rocky to attack him from behind and stuff. So this was pretty fun. I don't know if this isn't like a classic Austin Rock match, I would say.
But... Oh, no, it's not at all. But it's there to tell a story, right? It's there to, Rock's kind of there to soften Steve Austin up for Shawn Michaels. So
yeah, and there definitely are nation shenanigans. I mean, at one point, Rocky is distracting the referee and Mark Henry is attacking Steve Austin in the corner. And I don't know if you noticed this, but this was so cute. D'Lo Brown was just adorable cheering on Mark Henry as Mark Henry attacks Steve Austin. Because Mark Henry is, you know, doing his whole, like, I'm attacking you and I'm going to choke you in the corner or whatever. And D'Lo's like pumping his fist going, yeah, yeah, go and kill him.
Can I make a prediction, Sandra?
What?
I bet you in the next 6 months on this podcast that you utter the words, without irony, I love D'Lo Brown.
Oh, I'm sure it's coming. I'm sure it's coming. I find him adorable already.
I've got two words for you that are going to make you love him forevermore. Chest protector.
I'm so excited because I've heard of this. Mm-hmm. Because I know he, you know, has the Roman Reigns chest protector kind of deal, right?
Yeah, but it's more like a Cowboy Bob Orton thing of the cast.
Oh, okay, yeah. Like, no, I'm excited about D'Lo Brown. So, I am, because I know things are coming.
They are, yeah, and it's... Because, but the funny thing is, even because in my head I'm trying to think, right, okay, is the next little bit going to be good or a song? But I don't remember a lot of the stuff now, because 20 years later, and when you're still watching it currently, I remember the big angles. Like, I remember the big mm-hmm. stuff. I couldn't remember the week to week. So,
well, and I feel like the Nation of Domination especially doesn't get talked about a whole lot, right?
No, and it's, like... and it's the, because I was thinking about it, and it's I think the parallel is really interesting. I don't know if you agree with this or not, but... You know, you look at WrestleMania this year in New Orleans, and you've got the WrestleMania debut of Asuka versus Charlotte, dream match, AJ Nakamura, dream match, Undertaker, Cena, dream match, Ronda Rousey in the ring for the first time, the return of Kurt Angle, the return of Daniel Bryan, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens getting big matches in WrestleMania, all these different things that are going in there that make it one of these must-see shows. And then with WrestleMania 14, it was a must-see show because every match on that card had a purpose for being there.
Except for the Tag Team Battle Royal.
You know, we'll give them that one. But at least 75% of it all made sense, and it was exactly what it needed to be. And it's, I like that it's like the WrestleMania that happened 20 years ago is kind of a similar WrestleMania to today's one, and that everything's been built up so well. There's all these different stories going on. Like, you know, you get the Vince thing bubbling under the Austin and Michaels thing. You've got the Dissension of the Nation get on underneath Rock and Shamrock, and sometimes we're watching it back, I'll go, oh god, is this going to be good, is she going to like this part, and then I'll see an angle and I'll go, oh yeah, she is going to like this bit, that's good.
No, I agree, and it is really interesting to watch these 20 years apart, I think especially because of bringing Mike Tyson in 20 years ago and then bringing Ronda Rousey in now. I mean, obviously it wasn't planned, like, this is the 20 year anniversary of Mike Tyson and now we'll get Ronda Rousey. It's just, that's the way timing worked out. So watching those two things happen concurrently in both of our timelines has been fascinating for me, because they're obviously very different situations, because Mike Tyson is a special enforcer and has joined a heel stable and all that kind of stuff, and Ronda Rousey is actually going to be a performer and a wrestler. But I don't know, just the way that they're treating those two really big stars and the way they treated them coming into the World Wrestling Federation / WWE. I don't know. That's been really, really interesting to me. And I think the stories going into WrestleMania 14 are all there. Like, even the Luna Sable stuff, which I'm guessing a lot of people thought I was going to hate. I didn't know how I was going to feel about it. I love it. I think it's awesome. Like, I don't know how I'm going to feel when Sable is actually a performer in the ring and is having terrible matches. But right now, the story between the two of them, yeah, I want to see Sable kick Luna's ass. And I don't think she should. Like, Luna should probably murder her. But, you know, it's interesting. The story is good. I love the story of Ken Shamrock and The Rock. Like, the only one that kind of suffers for me, actually, is Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Owen Hart. And I don't really know who to blame for that exactly, because Owen wasn't on TV this week. He just wasn't there to answer Triple H. And it was just Triple H being like, so I won the European Championship from Owen Hart last week. Ha ha ha. I'm amazing. And I have a penis and I can't decide if it's cactus or prairie dog. And I just
don't care. The thing that I still, with the Triple H promo that gets me, is the way he said prairie dog.
Yeah, where he was like, prairie dog.
Yeah, yeah, because he was like,
with the swinging motion,
prune my cactus or like, what was, sit on my prairie dog?
Eat his prairie dog? I'll let them play with my prairie dog.
Oh yes, and because he all of a sudden just does this really strange inflection where he goes, play with my prairie dog. I don't know where that came from. Like, was he channeling Michael Hayes?
He's an enigma.
There's a lot of them in this show. Like you say, The main event's fun. There's a lot of kind of nation shenanigans going on during the match. There's a great bit where the camera cuts back to DX in the locker room, and like all of DX have this, like, you know, they're you know, WrestleMania Sunday, serious business. They're all serious, and Mike Tyson has the biggest fucking grin on his face you ever see in your life.
Of course he does, because he is terrible at this.
He's so ineffective. It's so funny. But again, it shows you how big a deal it was that even him being that ineffective made such a big difference.
Oh, yeah. Like, apparently it still made a huge difference for the company. So more power to them. He was worth it. But he astounds me with his ineffectiveness.
Do you think that if you had been watching this at the time, do you think you would have got a sense that Tyson would, like, if you were a fan at the time and you're watching it in real time now, would you kind of be like, yeah, I think it's a good idea they bring Tyson in to do this? Or would you have said, no, they shouldn't bring him in?
I think I just would have been like, why is he here? Like, and I mean, Mike Tyson was a name that I knew definitely from back then. Like, I knew that he was a big deal, but I don't think I would have been that into it. Just like, I'm not that into it now. I mean, my problems with Mike Tyson as a person aside, it's not the reason that I think he's just kind of there. Like, he doesn't make it that much more interesting to me. I think the story is interesting enough between Sean and Austin, and it just kind of seems like Mike Tyson joining DX, I just don't care very much.
I'm going to tell you why you're wrong, okay?
Okay.
Because we got Cold Stone.
Yes.
We got...
And that is adorable.
We got the...
Stephen Stone Cold.
Stephen Stone Cold.
Which is my favorite one.
We got the never to be duplicated ever again, the upward crotch chops. And then the new nickname for Shawn Michaels of Heartbreak.
And all of those things are pretty glorious. So I guess in retrospect,
of all the people I thought I could go to here to back me up on this, it would be you.
Oh, no, I love when he makes his, you know, gaffes and whatnot. I think he's adorable when he can't do anything.
Think about, do you know the best 10 seconds of pleasure that Mike Tyson ever gave you? Because I know it.
What?
There was a time for in your brain for 10 seconds, you were transported to Mike Tyson and Ahmed Johnson shopping together for fashion.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that was glorious. Mike Tyson's been totally worth it. I want to see him in Ahmed Johnson shop for headgear.
She's all about women's rights till she gets Ahmed back. So we have the match. Austin gets the win, obviously, with the stunner.
Right, I was actually surprised by that, though. I was surprised that Austin got a win with a stunner. Not because I didn't think Austin was going to beat Rocky Maivia. Like I said, he's beaten Rocky Maivia before. He beat him for that Intercontinental Championship that The Rock only has because Austin decided he couldn't be bothered to have it anymore, which I still think is stupid. But I was just kind of surprised that this match, of all matches, was allowed to go to a finish and that Rocky got pinned clean.
But that, what you see as we go forward, and I think this is probably one of the things that when we get to like the end of The Rock's career, I think you will, I'm not saying you're going to love him or anything, but I think one of the things that you'll probably like about him is that he would lose to everybody. Like, he never cared about losing to anybody at any point, even when he was big. So it just doesn't strike me that when you look at his career trajectory, that he ever really cared about losing.
Right.
He would just be like, okay, I'll lose, but I will be the star.
And that's one of the things that people have always said that they respected about The Rock. Because, I mean, Steve Austin, we know, did not like losing to people, ever. And so it's nice that The Rock, you know, didn't care and was like, I can be a big star and lose. Which is, it's nice to see a clean finish. I actually enjoy seeing a clean finish because we get so many disqualifications and so many schmazes and so many... things where it's like, oh, we need to protect this person so we can't have him lose, so we don't get a finish at all. And that's kind of annoying. So it was kind of refreshing to actually see a match finish.
Yeah. I also thought the timing was great. Like, sometimes just like a camera shot comes together and there was a shot of so Austin wins, pins The Rock with a stunner, and then D'Lo runs at him with a chair and gets the stunner. And it's just like the most perfect, like, angle, and like they were, the execution of it was just so well done. And then DX come out, they are gonna, you know, try and take out Austin. Austin and Shawn tease a fight, but Triple H makes sure that Michaels waits till WrestleMania, so they're kind of good off there with kind of a, they're gonna fight, but they're not gonna fight.
It was kind of a face-off. Austin was calling Shawn to the ring, and I was like, oh, of course Shawn and DX have to come out because Shawn has to talk more on this show because he hasn't talked already enough. But thankfully, there wasn't too much talking, and Austin's like, you know, come here and I'll fight you, and da-da-da. And then Shawn Michaels did look like he wanted to confront Stone Cold Steve Austin, but Triple H is like, no, settle. And so,
settle your tea kettle,
as Natalia would say, terrible inflection. But yeah, so the face off was nice. I mean, it's your go home show to WrestleMania. This is your main event, so it's nice to see them face off, I guess, and build tension.
Where is your thumb going to be this week, Sandra, for this episode of The Raw of Retro?
I didn't like this one as much as I liked last week's or the week before. This one's a thumbs in the middle for me. There was some really good stuff. Kane setting fire to everything was great. I loved that. The opening segment was just kind of strange and oddly executed. I really didn't like Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie versus the Quebecers with New Age Outlaw stuff. I mean, Jeff Jarrett versus Steve Blackman lacked an actual light-up battle, and that was disappointing.
Only you could use that in your thumbs middling to up ratio.
Well, I'm just saying, it was disappointing for what it could have been. I mean, it was DOA versus New Midnight Express. Who could possibly care? There was just too much DX, I think. Farouk versus Chains. It wasn't like a terrible show, and it did build to some of the main angles at WrestleMania, but I don't know. It wasn't my favorite, so thumbs in the middle.
I'm torn between middle and up. I'm going to look through it one more time.
I think either are, you know, valid. I don't think that, some of the stuff that was on the show was very good, for sure. I just feel like there was a lot of dross.
I'm going to go up because I thought the opening segment with Slaughter and Austin was really interesting. It was like a tide turner. I thought the Spike Piledriver thing that the Outlaws did on Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack was kind of a hot tease into their match, which kind of has been the coldest feud, really. Jeff Jarrett ended Steve Blackman's undefeated streak. I'm not going to not love that. The Kane thing was great. I like the thing at the graveside. Loads of tag teams stopped me from trying to watch DOA fight the new Midnight Express. Mike Tyson said heartbreak. The Nation stuff was fun. Barry Windham and Bradshaw was just like the most guilty of pleasures. The Sable and Sonny thing was really good. And then the main event was good. So yeah, you have thumbs up for me overall. But I do totally see that. Not that they would do that, but I thought it was a good go-home episode. But it's funny because it feels like every week there has been continuing stuff for like all of the programs.
Yes.
Which is...
Maybe part of the issue is that I felt a lot more jazzed about like Kane versus Undertaker, for instance, last week than I did this week. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm very glad that we got to see Kane doing lightning bolts at announcers and setting men on fire and things. Like,
you'd I'm maybe prefer if that segment that. Had been last week and the last thing you saw was Taker in the Tron and him in the ring.
I think so. But I understand that if, you know, Undertaker's going to win, they wanted Kane to look really good on the go home, blah, 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 blah. I know that that's how it works. I feel like, you know, Undertaker striking the effigy of Kane in the coffin and burning it was just more powerful of an image in terms of Undertaker than just sitting by a graveside having a chat.
It's a very fair assessment. PaulHeymanLive.com is where you can get your tickets for Paul Heyman in New Orleans. Inside underscore the ropes, Sondruth RW, KennyMC1985, that's all our Twitter handles. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where you will get all of our bonus content, including later this week, the probably about 2 hours, not recorded yet, but it probably will be ages, of Sondra, Finn Martin and I talking WrestleMania 14. It's exciting stuff, Sondra.
I'm very excited. I haven't watched WrestleMania 14 yet. I'm going to do that right after we get off the line here. Actually, I'm about to go and watch WrestleMania 14, so I'm looking forward to it. I guess we'll find out if I actually have watched all of this WrestleMania before or not, because I don't remember. Because a while back, before Retro Raw was ever going to be a thing, I did watch some random WrestleManias. I know I've seen 17. I don't think I watched all of 19, and I've heard that that one's really, really good too. But I feel like 14, I know I've seen some of the matches at least, so I can't imagine I would sit through that tag team battle royal though. So I guess we'll see what happens. But I'm definitely looking forward to recording with Finn about it, because his insight is always interesting, and also how much I can baffle him is always kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. And I'm the middleman who just kind of tries to steer the ship. Whose song was played as that this week, Sondra?
I think we should play Kane's theme, because he made fire.
He set a man on fire.
He did.
If he wants to come back in 2018 and do that to Dolph Ziggler, we will approve. Glenn Jacobs.
I would not say no.
Mayor of Knoxville. Bye, everybody.
Bye.